Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The U.S. considers sending another $800 million in weapons to Ukraine. Plus, the Biden administration unveils a plan to keep nuclear power plants operational. And as the Fed tries to stem inflation without raising unemployment, chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos says they're projecting they can make a soft landing.
But then you have to ask yourself, could they say anything else? The pilot can't come running through the cabin saying, "I think we're going to have an emergency crash landing."
It's Wednesday, April 20th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. is considering sending an additional $800 million in military aid to Ukraine, according to U.S. officials. The new aid would come just a week after the U.S. announced another $800 million weapons package for the country. The White House declined to comment on discussions about the additional aid, which could be announced later this week. We'll have more on what the rush to supply military equipment to Ukraine means for the defense industry later in the show. Ukraine says a humanitarian corridor has been agreed for Mariupol today in an attempt to allow women, children, and elderly people to escape the besieged Ukrainian port city. Thousands of civilians are believed to be trapped in Mariupol, which is largely controlled by Russian forces, without adequate food, water, or power. Humanitarian corridors have on occasion allowed residents to flee cities and towns where intense fighting has been taking place and allowed deliveries of food and medicine to enter, but they have also collapsed many times. The U.S. Department of Energy has announced a $6 billion program to financially support the operators of U.S. nuclear power plants in order to avoid their premature closure. The U.S. government described those reactors as the nation's largest source of clean energy and a vital resource as a part of the Biden administration's plans to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. Journal Energy reporter Jenny Strasberg says the operators of America's aging nuclear power plants could benefit from assistance.
Most were built 30 to 50 years ago, and that means that they take work to maintain safety and keep operating. Natural gas has been rather cheap, so that hasn't made a great incentive for nuclear power to be maintained, and those operators are going to want incentives to make the math work. And this is happening elsewhere too, around Europe, discussions about potentially extending the life of nuclear plants.
China says it has signed a security pact with the Solomon Islands that in its draft form would allow Beijing to dock its warships in the Pacific nation. WSJ reporter Rhiannon Hoyle says the agreement is likely to draw objections from the United States, as well as from Australia, which has traditionally been a key security partner to the Solomon Islands.
The Pacific region is a strategically important area. It has major shipping lanes and fisheries, and is the home to military bases of Western powers, such as in Guam. It's also an area where the US and its allies have maintained dominance since the end of World War II. Western nations are worried that small Pacific Island countries could be swayed by China's promise of loans for infrastructure, and that in doing so, China can gain leverage over less powerful countries and bind them to its strategic goals. Chinese officials say that they're boosting the national security of Solomon Islands and suggest the U.S. has neglected the country.
Solomon Islands officials couldn't be reached for comment, and neither the Solomon Islands nor China have published details of the pact. And Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has escalated his battle with Walt Disney, asking state lawmakers to consider ending the special tax district that's allowed Disney to govern the land on which its theme parks sit. This comes amid clashes between DeSantis and Disney in recent weeks over Florida's Parental Rights in Education bill, which critics call the Don't Say Gay bill. Disney opposes the legislation, which bars classroom instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation for school children through grade 3, and limits older students to material that is, quote, age appropriate. Losing the special district would be a blow to Disney in Florida, as it exempts the company from a host of regulations and saves it tens of millions of dollars every year, according to a person familiar with the matter. Florida lawmakers could take up a bill that ends the district this week. As the U.S. and its allies ship an increasing number of weapons to Ukraine, and as many countries bolster their military arsenals, defense contractors sense opportunity, and now they're beginning to report earnings. WSJ Heard on the Street columnist John Sindreo has been looking at just how profitable this latest wave of geopolitical tension is proving for the defense industry, and he joins us now. Hey, John.
Hello.
All right, so Lockheed Martin is the world's largest defense company in terms of sales, and they have just reported earnings yesterday. How is Lockheed doing, and to what extent is the Russia-Ukraine war already affecting business for them?
Well, it announced an 8% annual fall in sales in the first quarter, which was much below what Wall Street was expecting. But this is all due to, these COVID supply chain issues. So the other thing to underscore here is that the company didn't actually upgrade its outlook for 2022, which it had already given previously before the war in Ukraine. And the issue, of course, here is that it is still very unclear how the war in Ukraine will affect their business. But it is true that the company, according to what they said yesterday, rebranded itself now as a deterrent company, because they're seeing that, you know, many of those ESG sustainable investors that were saying, oh, we don't like weapons, we don't like military contractors, suddenly they're rethinking what they think about weapons. And of course, these companies want to position themselves to, you know, be able to get all this money too.
And is this sort of outlook similar to what you are hearing from across the defense industry?
Yeah, we could look at the latest Biden administration budget request, which is $813 billion. This is for 2023, so it would be a 4% increase on 2022 without even accounting for the $14 billion in aid for Ukraine that were passed earlier in March. And we can see that the budget priorities seem to be space, also nuclear deterrence. This is all a big win for Northrop Grumman, for example, which among other programs is developing the B-21 heavy bomber. But traditional vehicle procurement is set to slow. Then again, it is also true, for example, that Germany said last month that it will buy 35 F-35s because many of these NATO nations haven't actually reached their 2% targets for defense spending. And, you know, now they're trying to catch up.
And finally, John, why is it that Lockheed and maybe other defense companies aren't better able to capitalize on the geopolitical tensions we're seeing?
It's not that easy to pivot from anti-terrorism to peer-to-peer warfare. But you can, of course, always emphasize what your products do for the new type of warfare. For example, yesterday, Lockheed CEO emphasized a lot that the F-35 is also a core center and control node because it's got the largest data storage capacity of any fighter. At the same time, we have other problems as well, such as antitrust officials are now very determined to slam the brakes on 30 years of consolidation among military contractors. And there's, of course, inflation. Lockheed is, for example, trying to finalize multi-billion contract for dozens of F-35s, but because 60% of the sales are under fixed price contracts, they need to recalculate all these deals with suppliers because of inflation, meaning that they wouldn't break even. And finally, of course, for investors, the important bit here is that valuations for defense stocks have jumped, which happens often when there's a war. And the historical tendency is that as attention shifts elsewhere, these valuations kind of start deflating. So it might not be the best moment to actually enter this industry from the market point of view.
That was WSJ Heard on the Street columnist John Sindreo. John, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, how can the U.S. Federal Reserve keep inflation in check without significantly raising unemployment? The Journal's chief economics correspondent Nick Timmeros will join us to survey some possible outcomes of the central bank's balancing act after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The Federal Reserve is striking off into uncharted territory. Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos says that America's central bank has repeatedly set out to tame inflation before, but never when the economy is as hot as it is now. And Nick joins us now with a look at what Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has said is the combination of skill and good luck that the Fed will need to strike this balance. Hey, Nick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Luke.
I think most people know the Fed has a challenge in store for it as it seeks to try and control inflation. But why do you think that the stakes are so much higher this time around?
Well, it's not necessarily that the stakes are higher. It's that the challenge has never been one where the unemployment rate is this low and the inflation rate is this high. So the Fed, they've dealt with this before, and usually it leads to a recession. The way the Fed has brought inflation down has been to slow down the economy so much that you crash into a recession. That is a hard landing. On a couple of occasions, though, the Fed has achieved what economists refer to as a soft landing. That is where they're able to bring down inflation by slowing the economy just enough to get inflation down, but not so much that you crack the labor market and you send up the unemployment rate and you have a recession. The difference between the current situation and past periods where you could say the Fed achieved that soft landing is that inflation has never been so high during periods in the past when they were attempting the soft landing.
Is the Fed trying to absorb lessons from past decisions and apply them here so that it can avoid some of the mistakes of the past?
I think the challenge is that the economy today is just unlike anything we've seen in a very long time, maybe since after World War II or the Korean War. You had a pandemic where you shut down the economy, and now we've had a war. Wars create scarcity. Scarcity drives inflation. We're pushing one of the biggest commodity producers on the planet out of the financial architecture that we've built, Russia, facing heavy sanctions. And so that's going to further mess up global supply chains. The main issue here is that inflation is what you get when supply and demand are out of balance. The Fed can address demand. The Fed cannot address supply. And so when Janet Yellen says this is going to require skill and some good luck, the luck that she's talking about is really they need these parts of the economy that they have little control over in the near term to help them out. And if that happens, then they can have the soft landing. If it doesn't happen, it means they're going to have to destroy a lot more demand. They're going to have to create unemployment to create the slack in the economy that will bring down inflation. And that has always led to a recession.
Nick, it almost feels like managing interest rates is a rather blunt policy tool. Is there anything else the Fed could be turning to here, given the complexity of the current environment?
I think people may have the misperception that monetary policy is some finely crafted tool capable of surgical precision, and it's not. As you said, it's a blunt tool, and they really only have one tool, which is to raise interest rates. Now, it's true that because they engaged in a bond-buying stimulus program during the pandemic, they actually do have this other tool, which is their $9 trillion asset portfolio, and they can sell securities out of that portfolio, or they can choose not to replace those securities when they mature. That is a second tool that Alan Greenspan and Paul Volcker, the Fed chairs in the 1980s, 1990s, that they did not have. But the Fed doesn't really see their tool as something that's capable of that kind of precision. And really, if the Fed becomes concerned that consumers are beginning to expect higher prices year after year after year, they really don't want to have that sort of psychology take hold. So they will raise interest rates to deal with that. And it's really hard to tell what sort of forces you unleash when you do that.
And finally, Nick, what other factors are at play here that we should be thinking about that are sort of out of the Fed's control?
Well, it's just a very uncertain period. We've never been through 2 years that have been as action-packed as these for the economy. And so it would have been very difficult to forecast 6 months ago everything that policymakers are facing today. And I think it'll be very difficult right now to forecast what things are going to look like in 6 months. The Fed says right now they can achieve this soft landing, which is somewhat comforting. But then you have to ask yourself, could they say anything else? The pilot can't come running through the cabin saying, I think we're going to have an emergency crash landing. So we're going to have to wait and see how the data unfolds And if the Fed does get that help from the supply side of the economy, if chip shortages begin to ease, if oil prices don't continue to rocket higher and higher, if commodity prices don't do the same, then maybe there's a chance that they can achieve this very elusive soft landing.
That was Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent Nick Timiraos. Nick, as always, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, tech startups boasting new apps and telehealth services are now catering to a growing number of women in their 40s and 50s to help them navigate menopause. However, WSJ family and tech columnist Julie Jargon says some within the medical community are urging women to take caution, especially when dealing with services selling supplements to ease symptoms or issuing prescriptions without properly assessing patients.
I spoke with someone at the Mayo Clinic Women's Health Group who said it's a lot of cowboy stuff is going on, that a lot of companies have pitched Mayo for partnerships, and that a lot of them have lacked substance, don't have evidence-based treatment techniques, and are just trying to make a buck off of this growing market of women who are aging and wanting to kind of take control of their health.
For some advice on the right questions to ask about these new services, check out the link in our show notes. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.